Before we get into part one of the Brian Stith podcast, I want to take a moment to thank all of you for listening. Our podcast listenership has grown and grown, and thank you all for subscribing and listening. We will continue to make strides and podcast with more of your favorite Wahoos. We now have over 50,000 listeners. In addition to the podcast, the Jay Willie Show is lighthearted, fun, and informative. Jay Willie is now live every other Monday on YouTube. Check out the past shows on the Locker Room Access website. He's a great personality and worth the watch. We are also branching out to other sports. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. TW, what's the latest on the Locker Room Access website?
So we'll continue to drop exclusive gear. I don't know if you've checked that out. Listeners, we're going to launch some throwback stuff coming up here soon. People always ask, hey, when are you going to bring back the so-and-so hoodie? And, you know, we're trying to keep stuff exclusive, you know, and limited in quantity so that, you know, not everyone's wearing the same stuff, but we launch different colors, different styles. And, you know, we've done so many throwback podcasts. Be on the lookout for some throwback gear. We think you're going to love it. So that stuff all coming soon. What you do is go on lockerroomaccess.com, subscribe to our newsletter, and you'll get updates, you know, whether it's blogs, gear, podcasts, forum updates. It's all going to be in there. So make sure you log in and subscribe. We have other, you know, the forum is super busy. Fresh, you're on there a lot. What are you seeing on there?
The main thing I notice about it, again, since I pressed pause in 1993 on everything in the world, is people love the recruiting stuff. And we have Who's Got Next and a bunch of other people that know all the what's happenings of the recruits, you know, not only just Virginia, but around the country with how intricate it's all become. And so I like reading it. I have nothing to add to it, unfortunately, because I just don't know anywhere nearly as much as these guys do. So I think a lot of the old heads that are following the team want to see, like, who's the next Ty Jerome, who's the next DeAndre Hunter, the next Brian Stith maybe. You know, you might be able to find out.
Brian Stith is considered by many to be the best player to come out of UVA, not name Ruff. For many years, I had heard of him, but had no idea how good he was. Thanks to T-Dub and Dougie, nearly every day, they make a reference to him and tell me how good he was. T-Dubs, you named your kid after him. It's just like he's like Mr. UVA for you.
Absolutely. He is. I mean, for me, this is obviously bucket list. I actually never thought, like Tate said it on our podcast. He was like, you should never meet your heroes. You should never talk to your heroes. So I was never like, oh, I have to do this. It was just like the opportunity presents and Fresh got it, you know, shout out Fresh. Thank you for getting him on. And it was awesome. I mean, it was everything for me personally, just to be able to hear and relive all of those old stories. And as a kid, you know, even Fresh and I talked about it. We didn't mention he's a valedictorian in high school. Like he was like Mr. All-American everything. So it was really just, you know, I don't even know how to fucking describe it. It was so good to hear all of the stories and be able to rehash like the Notre Dame, the 19-point game, the chip tooth game, like all those tournament games. We didn't even get into like the Wake Forest game and, where he had like 37 and scored 10 out of 12. Like he's had so many incredible games. It's actually hard to go through them all. But to talk to him and have him on and make that connection was, I hope the fans enjoy it. I think they will. I can't imagine people being bored in this one. What about you, Fresh? How is this for you?
Oh man, you know, he was a year older than me. He was definitely one of the guys, but he's always a notch or seven above the guys, if that makes sense.
All right.
I don't like phrases like I'm blessed because of this, I'm blessed. But I'll tell you something. I was blessed to be able to play college basketball with Brian Stith on his team. That's kind of the best I can say. And he was so excited to come on. He's so excited about the Virginia and, you know, the fans and people that follow him. He doesn't forget it. He does not. And he went on to do bigger things, I guess. But it's very important to him. And he's, you know, you'll see. Talking about his family and his grounding, the whole thing. So
Jeff Jones' story, incredible. Like for the listeners out there, make sure you tune in. From there's a part where he talks about when the transition from Terry Holland to Jeff Jones, and I'd never heard that. I thought I knew everything. I did not know that. No, that part was really cool.
I was on the damn team, and I'm not sure I knew the whole depth of the story.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was really unique. And then parental advisory, I just cursed already, so I already ruined that. Right. But like, there's a little bit of cursing in here for those that have kids in the room and stuff like that. Heads up on that. It's not a lot. I would say like 3 cuss words, maybe 4. I don't know. It's not a lot. But there's an MF-er in there, I think, that we drop. But we get going. This is really fun. This is awesome.
Yeah, we're good at cursing though. We do it the right way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mark doesn't. Mark stays clean, but we throw it out there. And then thank you again, Fresh, for getting him on. I know that was a lot of work for you, but thank you.
Nah, man, he's the best family.
Ryan Stith now joins us. As the guys call you, be nice. Thanks so much for joining.
Man, I'm so glad to be on. I actually thought I was supposed to be on a month prior, man, but my dad was sick, and I called Fresh and explained to him my situation, man. And as always, he gave me a great assist, like he did against Notre Dame over and over and over again. My man, Fresh, thank you all for your understanding and patience, though. I appreciate you.
Yeah, we're all sorry to hear about your dad, and condolences to you and your family.
Yeah, I told these guys during crunch time, we had one play, and it was like, just fine, be nice. Fine, be nice. If you look him off, get ready to run.
Traditionally, we do the interview, the subject matter, and we go down memory lane and we talk. But we're going to do it a different way with this podcast because of who you are. You don't know, almost every podcast, the two of them make some reference to you.
Oh my goodness.
And believe me, after understanding and researching you and watching your tapes and remembering you as a college player and an NBA player, I totally get why. It is an honorary form that these two guys make references to you in almost every single podcast or almost every single conversation, right? I mean, you got T-Dubs. I don't know if you're aware of this, who named his child after you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did, man. The funny thing about it, I thought it was his brother's child. I didn't realize it was his.
Yeah.
I remember that picture, man. That picture is special, man. I tell you, I got it on my phone.
And we can start right there. That's actually the first question I have. Random Asian man who you have no freaking clue who I am names his son after you. How weird is that? Just in general, like I know it's weird. I'm like, that shit's weird. Like talking to you, you're not supposed to meet your heroes, but here we are. I appreciate you taking the time. But
listen, man, this picture brought tears to my wife's eyes. She thought this was the cutest thing ever.
That's awesome.
She was like, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't
I I was worried about the jersey. I'm not gonna lie right here. I'm worried about my jersey. I'm like, just don't damage it. That's how long I've had that thing. But yeah, man, absolutely.
That's the best.
All right. We'll just start early in your career. You know, we usually talk about we know you were down Duke, Virginia, but you had teammates that were incredible. This is a picture of you with Alonzo.
Can we reference Boo Williams and those shorts, man? Yeah. Oh my goodness, bro.
Crazy.
Wow.
And they're coming back.
It looks like I have on a dress.
Yeah, you got like a little short, like a short skirt on, be nice. Does that say Tysinger? Was he the sponsor?
Tysinger. He was our sponsor, no doubt.
So Zoe was driving a Lexus back then at an early age?
No, he was being picked up in one though. He didn't have his license.
What was that?
He was being picked up in one. He didn't have his license.
So, no, Mark, we have an old-time booster and huge fan and great human being, Mr. Tysinger, had Tysinger Lexus. So anybody that had Tysinger on their car was a little bit to wonder.
He had Tysinger anything you wanted to drive.
Tysinger whatever it takes.
Yeah, exactly.
Great man. And his daughter, Leslie. Was on
that part of it. He did so much for the youth in that area. He was a very generous human being, man. He was definitely a warm soul, and he was a big fan of kids and big fan of, you know, athletics, particularly basketball. And, you know, you look at Alonzo and I, we were just, you know, two of the many beneficiaries of his generosity. So, you know, hearts out, man, you know, big ups to Mr. Ty Singer. And Leslie, yes, you know, she also was, you know, our manager when we played at University of Virginia, and she's just as sweet as they come. So I love the Ty Singer family. They hold a very special and dear place in my heart.
Same. So who else was on that team?
Yeah, go ahead.
Man, this team was loaded, man. We had the freak, Terry Kirby. He was a All-American in three sports, football, basketball, and baseball. You also had Cornell Tutu Parker, who was on this team. Ron Reese, Kevin Swan, Malon Brown. That team was loaded. This team won actually the first AAU national championship for Boo Williams back in 1988.
That's awesome.
Is Malon Brown? Is that the coach? The guy that's coach? Yeah. Oh, yes. Malon Brown, who was up at Holy Cross.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Malon.
Hey, he's a great friend. He's a great person. Yeah. I see him all the time. Now he's coaching at. He's an assistant at University of Pittsburgh. He's also very, very close to the Capel family, who their father, Jeff Capel, and Jason's father used to be the head coach at Old Dominion University here in the area, and they became very, very close.
And walk us through your college recruitment. Your list is, you know, basically everyone. But what was it? How did you narrow down your list back then?
Oh, man, I was being recruited by everyone. I mean, I went from my sophomore year to being unknown to having a great sophomore season, making it to the state high school championship, where we lost to an eventual teammate of mine at UVA, Mark Cook. And then that following summer, man, my recruitment blew up. Back then, AAU wasn't as big, but what was huge were basketball camps, five-star basketball camp, prep star. And I remember going to those camps and just exploding onto the scene. And that's when my recruitment just blossomed. And I finally narrowed my college choices to the University of Virginia, Duke, Villanova, Georgia Tech, and Hampton University. I was a huge Michael Jordan fan. I was a huge fan of North Carolina basketball, and I was heartbroken that they didn't recruit me. And when I narrowed my list, in August, heading into my senior year, and 2 weeks after I narrowed my list, I got a phone call from Dean Smith, and I almost cried. The hardest thing I had to do was to tell him that I had closed my recruitment and I was going to stick with the five that I had selected. And, you know, I took my visits, you know, to each of those schools. My first visit actually was to Duke University. It was an amazing visit. Danny Ferry took me out. I was on four of my official visits with Christian Laettner, and we had talked about going to the same school. We visited UVA, Duke, Villanova, and Georgia Tech together. And Christian and I were talking about possibly going to the same school. It made sense. We thought that we could be a heck of a 1-2 punch. And back then, what happened was the last day of the recruiting period, the coaches will always go and see their number one recruit. So on the last day, Duke went to see Christian Laettner. And my mom was a huge fan of Christian Laettner. And I mean, and of Coach K and their staff, Mike Bray, Bob Bender, those guys were the assistant coaches. And University of Virginia came to see me on the last day of recruitment. And I said, Ma, as much as I love Duke and Coach K and what they have to offer, and I'll be surrounded by great players and think we have a chance to win a national championship, I just feel the love at the University of Virginia and Coach Holland and, you know, Coach Odom and Coach Jones and Coach Littlepage. I think that I could be able to maximize my talents more at the University of Virginia rather than Duke. I had called Coach Cremins. I loved everything that they had to offer. You know, they said, you know, they were going to put me alongside, you know, Brian Oliver and Dennis Scott and Tom Hammonds. I went up to Villanova. They told me that, you know, although I played the same position as Doug West, I will see a lot of minutes, and then I'll be ready to step into his footsteps as soon as he graduated. At the end of the day, I just felt comfortable just going to UVA, and that's what made my decision.
And then
I'll tell you something, B. That whole Duke recruiting story scared me a little bit here. Like, I'm like, wait, don't tell me Brian Stitt's going to Duke. Don't tell me he's going to Duke. I'm like, did this shit really happen?
Oh man, I'm telling you, man. My mom really loved them, and you know, obviously, you know, as a family, when we talked together, and I told them that I was leaning toward, you know, UVA. You know, I saw tears and stuff kind of roll down her eyes, but she respected it because she said it was my decision. But Coach K had her wrapped around her fingers.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then as it went on, you become obviously name in the rafters, adored, maybe greatest player ever in Virginia history. I mean, you got what you wanted, right? In terms of you were the program changer at Virginia versus who knows, right? We don't know that, but it's just kind of like Duke had so much going on at that time. It was interesting.
First of all, I'm not the greatest player to ever play at UVA, and you know, I may have scored the most points. But there's a guy by the name of Ralph Sampson. That, yeah. But I tell you one thing, man. I regret nothing about my decision by attending the University of Virginia. I loved all 4 years, every experience that I had there. And, you know, UVA made me the man that I am. Yeah. And I owe so much, you know, to what, you know, I have become later in life because of my experiences there at in Charlottesville. So I do not regret my decision. Not at one time do I ever think about what would have happened if I had chosen Duke or if I had gone to Georgia Tech or Villanova. So I'm glad that I was a part of the UVA basketball family.
Outside of basketball, what are your favorite memories about the grounds at UVA?
Oh man, there's just so many.
If you just think of like three to five favorites.
Well, first of all, I'm a huge football fan. You know, if anybody knows me, everybody knows that I think that I could have been in the NFL. So I used to go to the all of the football games. You know, that was the highlight of my week, you know, during the fall, being able to go to the football games and support my teammates, because I live with football players. You know, I live with Terry Kirby and Chris Slade, Sean Moore. I live with Ron Carey and Big Ray Roberts. And, you know, we will all sit down and, you know, we will have our powwows. And, you know, they thought that they could be basketball players. I thought that I could be, you know, a quarterback or Herman Moore. You know, so I really, really embrace, you know, those Saturdays in the fall when I had a chance to go and be a part of UVA football, particularly when we were there. You know, they had made it to number one in the country until they lost to Georgia Tech. So, I mean, you know, I was all a part of that huge movement. Second, you know, being from the country, man, I'm a nature person. Just to be able to see those cherry blossoms, man, in the fall and in the spring, you know, I would just go out there, sit and just read books, do studying, you know, just take pictures. I mean, it was just amazing how beautiful our campus was in the fall and spring. So that's the second thing that I remember most. The third thing is a little bit removed off of campus, but just being able to have a relationship with Kenny and Sissy Leatherwood. I mean, they basically became my mom and dad away from home, and being able to get away from the grind and the pressure, just being able to just get away from the grind and the pressure and just being able to go over there and relax. We are still great friends to this day. Mr. and Mrs. Leatherwood have essentially become part of our families. Their son is like, you know, a little brother to me, Kevin. So, you know, those are, you know, three of the things that stick out to me most about my experiences, you know, at the University of Virginia.
Be nice. No shout out for Rugby Road.
I mean, you know,
I don't think I saw you on Rugby Road.
No, I wasn't a big Rugby Road guy, man. You know, I maybe went over there once or twice, you know. You know, I just kind of stayed in my room and studied on the weekends and, you know, occasionally went to the SAB and, you know, we'll leave it at that. Next question.
And this next photo, this voted most likely to succeed. You got JJ. This is, I think, his first season as head coach. But this old school poster with John Crotty is framed up in a picture in the back.
Yeah, he looks like he was part of that portrait, rather part of the team. But, hey, man, I tell you, that first year when JJ took over as the youngest head coach in ACC history, man, we had so much momentum coming back that year that no one within our program doubted the fact that we had a chance to be very good. And, man, we got off to an amazing start. We lost to UCLA in the Great Alaska Shootout, which was a hell of a game. And man, we were marching. I think we had gotten up to 11th in the country. And
schedule.
When Anthony Oliver broke his hand, that changed the fortunes of our season because we relied on everybody and what they could bring to the table. And Anthony was such a big part of what we did, you know, defensively, that, you know, it was hard to replace that. And, you know, after Anthony got hurt, I mean, with the schedule that we had, I want to say we played three games on Tobacco Road, back to back to back. And, you know, we had three consecutive losses and we just weren't able to recover from that.
Yeah. Right here in March, you can see at Duke, at North Carolina, at Wake Forest.
And I want to say Anthony broke his hand the week prior before we went on that road trip. And, man, that just basically just kind of sealed our fate.
I'll jump. We're going to jump around a little bit here, but here's this next one.
Come on, B.
BJ said you still got the shirt in the back. This is the Slovakia game. Y'all dressed up on, I don't know what staircase that is. Fresh is somehow respectable.
This was inside the rotunda. This was inside the rotunda. But I always tell BJ that, you know, when I was young, man, I was the smoothest one of all the stiff men.
You know what? He didn't refute that. He didn't argue that. Yeah, he just said that shirt is definitely still in your closet to this day. That's what he said.
No, BJ is telling that. No, that's not the case. I don't buy many clothes, but no, I do not have this shirt. But what's funny about this, I remember Anthony used to say, yeah, you know, I'm the pimp. And these all girls, right? All the guys.
he's got like a quadruple breasted suit on that one, AL.
Those were the days, man.
There's Terry Kirby right there, our Bo Jackson for Virginia.
Yeah, that's right.
And then
Big Red, rest his soul.
This next one.
Oh, man.
Setting the basketball world on fire, and this is you.
That was a sweet
1990 poem. Wooden Award candidate.
I have that in every house that I've ever lived in. This is like my favorite all-time poster.
Yeah, I love that poster. Old school Virginia. I was going to say that this is heading into your last year.
Yes, heading into my senior year. You know, I had so many expectations, you know, for my final year at UVA, you know, wanted to be able to make it to the NCAA tournament and see if we could at least get back to the Elite Eight like I did, my first year.
Yeah.
Just had so many aspirations. You know, we had a great recruiting class coming in, but it took us a while to gel. And, we kind of hit our stride toward the end of the season. And, you know, even though we weren't able to make the NCAA tournament, we were able to win the NIT, you know, and that was a sweet ending to, you know, a very good career for myself.
And we'll get to that one here. Here's the first one. I couldn't find a photo. This is the game we all talk. This is of legend here. The comeback against Notre Dame where you scored the last 19. What do you remember? Like, Fresh says, I bet he doesn't even remember it. Like, what do you remember about that game?
He does not remember being in the game because you are on another planet. In the last 2 minutes, I couldn't even talk to you. I was like,
come on. You know what's funny about this, man, is later on in my career, you know, I got drafted by the Denver Nuggets, and LaPhonso Ellis got drafted 5th, and I went 13th. And, you know, LaPhonso went to Notre Dame, and every time he said something smart to me, I always would bring this game up. I said, I'm not going to tell you what I used to tell Fonz exactly, but we used to have a lot of fun off of it, man. I just remember John Crotty got into foul trouble.
Right.
And, you know, it was like a switch. It was like, oh, my goodness, man, you know, somebody has to take over this game. And literally, Fresh came in, and every time Fresh came down the floor, he gave me the basketball. This never would have happened without Doug Smith. If I was double team, triple team, Fresh would throw the ball up in the air. I'll go get it, and then good thing seemed to happen.
I was afraid of you in that game. I have two stories from this game. outside of my big three from the corner. Different story. I think we're down by one or it's tied and there's 2 seconds left. Our ball underneath, right? Our basket. Now, you had the last 17 points in the whole game. They are literally – they have four guys guarding you. Turner's open. AO's open. And you're looking at me like, yo, Fresh, the ball is not – the ball's coming here. I just threw the ball up, B, and I turned around and didn't even watch. And then buckets. And do you remember we go back to the locker room and Coach Jones was like, you know who our MVP was today? Motherfucking Fresh. I go, yeah, B, nice. You didn't do shit today, B. Sorry, I'll take it.
I remember that. Absolutely. Well, that was an amazing game, and it was on national TV. Yeah. We had a big audience. And what's funny about that is when I went down to Orlando to the Orlando Classic, which is a pre-draft camp. When I got interviewed by NBA teams, they all referenced that game. So,
wow.
A lot of people got a chance to see that performance, and I was just glad we were able to come out on the winning end.
He never lost to them.
No, I used to remind LaPhonso of that as well. I told him I should have been the 5th pick, and he should have been 13.
Oh, for sure. facts.
Flip that money.
And then we're going to go down. You touched on this. This is the bracket 1989 NCAA tournament. Yeah, number 5, Virginia versus Providence. Talk about your chip tooth incident. You remember that? I loved your quote that when they asked you, what was it? Did it hurt having a chip tooth in your plane? You said, no, only when I breathed. So what was that like?
The only thing about it, man, because we were in a dog fight. and I was having a pretty good game. John, Richard, you know, we were balling. And when I broke my tooth, instinctively, I just kind of put my hand up and all of my parts of my tooth just kind of fell in my hand. I remember going up and down the court a few times. Luckily, you know, nobody threw me the basketball and there was a timeout. And I went up to Ethan. I said, Ethan, I'm going to hand you these. And you better not tell Coach Jones, Coach Harlan, or Coach Odom. You better not tell them. He said, what is it? I said, my tooth just came out. And I said, he said, is it bothering you? I said, man, it's killing me. But you better not say anything to him. And me and Ethan became like that. That was like my best friend because he could hold the secret. I was like, yeah, this is a dude I can go to the Fox school with right here.
And then, so what was it like playing with that? Because I imagine it hurt every step, like any, because your nerve is now exposed and you're running around.
Man, it was excruciating. But I mean, when you get, and you know, in the moment, and you know, you don't want to be able to, you know, it was no guarantee that, you know, I would be able to make it back to the NCAA tournament. We wanted to advance so well. We thought that, you know, we had the momentum. So man, you were gonna have to carry me off that court.
That's awesome.
You know, man, you know, if I wasn't gonna be able to play that game, not because of a chip too.
And right, there was another game where you were swallowing your blood so that no one would know, or was that that game?
No, this was all part of the same
game. Oh, yeah, that was the same. Mm-hmm. That's wild. So for people that don't know, during the game, your mouth was filling up with blood and you were just swallowing it so no one would know. Is that right?
Yep. And the coaches kept asking me questions and stuff in the hall, and all I was doing was some... Because it was my very front tooth, and you know, if I had, you know, started talking, and
they would know.
Obviously they were going to see it, and you know, I just didn't want to take that chance.
So we win 197. What happens after that game? Did you, with your tooth, did you immediately go?
Well, immediately after the game, you know, Coach Ethan told Coach Holland, and he said, "What do you mean? When did this happen?" And, you know, he was asking all of these questions. You know, by this time, you know, I'm laid up in the corner, you know, trying to get medication because my tooth is killing me. But, you know, we had a day in between games. I was able to go to a local dentist, and they were able to work on it and be able to get me ready for the Middle Tennessee State game.
Wow, that's wild. Did you know that, Fresh? Do you remember anything?
No, I don't. And I was up there because that's when – finally, Virginia got smart enough to start recruiting me. It was during that tournament. And I'm down there in Fayetteville, so I'm going to the games and meeting all the guys. Yeah. But I had no idea.
Because you were being recruited during this Oklahoma game, right, this tournament. This is when you're
recruiting. Yeah, well, and these games were in Vanderbilt, so I was up there having dinner with the guys. And, you know, yes. I told Coach Holland I'll get back to him on my offer because I got some other stuff going on, like Arkansas State. You know, I was trying to play it cool. I just thought Bryant was missing a tooth. I thought it was normal, yo.
That's crazy.
I do remember going to those games and you just coming off the double screen and 15 to 18 foot buckets. Money.
Automatic.
Over and over. I'm like, who is this dude?
As a matter of fact, when I started coaching at Brunswick, man, I used to run that play. That was my favorite play to call because it just had so many different options. You know, right. They have post-up option. It had an option where you came off the double screen.
Right.
You can reverse the basketball, and then they will reverse it back for an isolation. You know, if you were a scorer, it just gave you so many opportunities to attack the basket.
And then the Oklahoma game, that was a big one. It's kind of on another national stage for you. What do you remember about going against Stacey King and those guys?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, they were the number one seed. Yeah. Nobody gave us a snowball chance in hell to win that game. We were playing at Rupp Arena. I mean, it was an electric crowd. We were at the same site as the University of North Carolina. So when the game kind of started, you know, we had our fans and, you know, they were cheering. But, you know, that was basically it. What I remember the most – I remember the North Carolina Tar Heel fans just going absolutely nuts when we won that game. And, you know, that showed me then that, you know, even though that there was bad blood between Coach Holland and Dean Smith, that it was bigger, man. It was ACC against the world. And, you know, that's when I understood the fraternity and the strength of the Atlantic Coast Conference.
And then the following game, we talked about it with JJ, Virginia, Michigan. And I think we talked about Richard Morgan, too, in terms of, like, how that game went, the landslide. What do you remember?
I remember that Glenn Rice was on an absolute tear. He may have had one of the best NCAA tournaments in the history of the game.
Yep.
And it just – that tournament propelled him to a different level. He really became a megastar during this tournament. But after we had beaten Oklahoma, we felt that we had a chance. And Michigan came out and played a junk defense on me. And that's the first time that I had ever had a team play a diamond and one against me. And they put Sean Higgins, who was 6'8", and it really confused me. And I struggled to score in the first half. And Richard wasn't on that game. Crotty couldn't hit. And I really felt that, you know, my inability to figure out their defense and figure out the score kind of doomed us. And once they got their lead, we weren't able to overcome it. They were just too talented and too good. But I grew up a lot. I remember going back and just watching the replays of that game, figuring out different ways I could score against a diamond or a boxing one defense, because if anybody played me that again, I wanted to be ready for it.
Yeah, Sean Higgins also another crazy game.
Yes.
Sean Higgins and Glenn Rice, ridiculous. Thousands of
They had Loy Vault, Terry Mills, Ramil Robinson, man. That was a whole talented team. You know, we played against some good Duke teams, but I'll put that Michigan team up against anybody that we played my 4 years at the university. I think that was the best team that I ever encountered.
And they did not let up that game. They were on that game because I think Glenn Rice was 9 for 11. Yeah.
And then they hit everything.
We'll jump to the next bracket. This game, 1991. Once again, this is the Richmond Coliseum, Virginia, Notre Dame is the first matchup. One of your many matchups with Notre Dame, but this one, a little more meaningful. First round NCAA 7-10. Do you remember this one?
Yeah, I do. I remember, you know, playing at the Richmond Coliseum, man. The crowd was rocking. It was a very good game. It was a close game. You know, we were able to be victorious. But what I really remember, man, is us playing against Syracuse, man. I tell you, that next game, I may have had one of the best games that I had in my career. And I was hitting everything. I was hitting threes. I was hitting mid-range jump shots. I was getting on the offensive glass. I mean, they kept rotating guys on and off of me. And it came down to the last shot. Again, I had beaten my guy, and Derek Coleman rotated over and forced me to take a pull-up jump shot from the short corner. And, man, I wasn't good enough, man. I didn't have that fadeaway jump shot in my repertoire. I relived that shot over and over again, man. If I had shot a fadeaway jump shot, I think I would have been able to get the ball over his outstretched arms, and it would have been bucket because I was making everything. Yeah. If he hadn't blocked that shot, it was going in. But, you know,
yeah, he got a lot of arm on that block B.
I was sitting
right there. He got a lot of arm on that.
I think most Virginia fans had always – I think at game – the first time UVA got on game day, somebody held up a sign and said, Derek Coleman fouled Brian Stith. That's how that's how much pent up, like, people think about that shot still to this day. Like, that's so
– I know, man. I know. But it never should have come to that, man.
Yeah.
I should have hit him with the baby fadeaway right on the baseline, just teardropped him, and we gone to advance to the next round.
So Mark's friend and I were on the phone with Billy Owens not that long ago, and he talked about – he's like, I don't mind Virginia. And the first thing I said to him was, well, that's because Derek Coleman fouled Brian Stith, and they didn't call it. He just – he got such a kick at it right out of the gate.
Billy and I were good friends. Again, yeah. Remember, we grew up in an era where you had to go to basketball camps. Yeah. Man, I remember playing against Billy Owen at five-star basketball camp at Hornsdale in Pittsburgh. And he was widely regarded as being one of the number one players in the country in my class. Right.
Yeah,
one
absolutely.
Publication had Billy Owens. One publication had Lonzo Mourning. And a different publication had Sean Kemp as being the number one players in our class. I mean, those are three pretty damn good basketball players.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And then – going down this the following year, 1991, player of the game, Doug Smith, Virginia versus BYU. I think Sean Bradley had the record for most blocks in an NCAA game. There still stands today, I believe, of 14, I want to say.
14, yep.
Do you remember that
game? Yeah, I remember that game. I remember us not realizing that he was 7'6", and we kept taking the ball inside to him, and he just kept blocking the shot. I still can't figure that out.
Yeah, I think he almost blocked my three when he was in the paint, and he took one step, and I'm like, pump fake, yo.
Yes, he had a game for the ages, man. He was on top of his game, and you know we were playing. You know, literally, you know, in their backyard, you know, they had an advantage. And yeah, that was an uphill battle for us. But, you know, we gave it our best shot. And
that's a rough seeding / scheduling because we go to Salt Lake City to play 10 and we're seeded 7th.
Yeah.
And that was, if you remember that trip, it was just a weird trip because it's a different kind of city.
No question.
We unfortunately played the same way.
Altitude. I mean,
it was a weird spot.
Different factors, yeah.
I remember thinking this was commonplace too, because then a couple of years later, then it's Kansas and Kansas City, right? And it's like a lot of UVA on the road in the tournament for whatever reason that was. And then here's coming. You know, you already stole my thunder on this one because I remember you saying you went a bunch of visits and you thought about him. But what about this documentary? Did you watch this? Do you have a relationship with him still to this day?
Yeah. You know, Christian and I probably talk maybe once or twice a year. And, you know, Christian is a misunderstood guy. Off of the court, I mean, he is a very down-to-earth, very caring person. He'll give you the shirt off his back, but when you step in between those lines, he becomes a beast. And you know, he's just like any other competitor, man. He wants to win. He had a fire that burned inside of him, man, that was very intense. I respect the hell out of Christian, man, because I got the chance to see him up close and personal. And just like Billy Owens, you know, Christian and I competed against each other, you know, ever since the 9th grade, and I got a chance to spend, you know, some time with him, you know, during the summer on the United States national team. And, you know, we got a chance to spend, you know, time against each other, you know, in the NBA. I mean, you know, he's a winner. And, but, you know, he's a guy, man, that when he got on that court, by any means necessary.
Yeah, everyone hated him in a sense. Just the whole Duke thing took a whole nother meaning. I know Ferry, everybody hated Ferry too. I feel like Christian Laettner brought it to a whole – he played into it really well. He embraced
it.
He did. He really did.
he got away with a lot of shit, man. You know, I mean, he did, man. I wish I could have gotten away with half the stuff he did. You know, Christian was a, you know, he was like, he was playing in the NBA. He was allowed 6 fouls. You know, when I got off the bus in Durham, I had 3 fouls when I walked into the gym. You know, so, you know, it was different, but I mean, hey, you know, that's part of the landscape. You got to understand it, and you just go out and compete.
So when we went up against Duke, was there a little extra something in it for you in terms of, like, that was your last school, that you wanted to give it to them a little more, or was there more of a friendly?
No, man, listen.
You want to bust their ass, right?
Man, this is I love Coach K to death, and, you know, I told him, I said, listen, you know, I want to be able to come to Duke. How much time would you guarantee, you know, could I earn as a freshman? He said, you probably won't play as a freshman because, you know, you won't be able to beat out Robert Bricky. And, man, that stuck with me. And every time we played, you know, Duke, man, you know, I just had some out for Brick, man. I mean, Brick is a good dude, nothing against him. But, man, that was intense motivation. And
that's awesome.
You know, they had a great team. I mean, you know, late after Bricky, then, you know, Cam, you know, they had Brian Davis, then Grant Hill. And, I mean, they were loaded with talent, man. But yep. It was all – that always stuck in the back of my mind. Right. It, you know, fate would have it that, you know, I broke the school scoring record at Duke. Right. And in classic, you know, Coach K fashion, you know, he's – after the game, he gave me the game ball, and you know it was special, man. It was.
I think he stopped the game, B, because he wanted to get that thunder. But I think he stopped the game and presented it to you, or he did it after the game.
It was right after the game. You know, right before, as we were going through the layup line. You know, he took the. I mean, going through the line to shake hands after the game. You know, he took the mic, made the announcement, presented me with the game ball right before I headed back into the locker room, and. It was good, yep. Man. The Duke fans, they were awesome. So, you know, I enjoyed that moment.
Game respects game. And then here's this next one. Virginia, I was telling Fresh before, this is the first time I saw Superman with kryptonite. This is the Florida State game. We're up. We're down 1, 2 seconds left. You're at the free throw line. And you missed both of them. Do you remember this?
Oh, I remember it vividly. You know, every time we played against Houston in the NBA, uh-huh. Sam Cassell will always say when I went to the free throw line, hey, Steph, you remember the free throws at UVA? He will always say that, man, for 10 years. For 10 years in the NBA, he always reminded me of that. But, man, I tell you, when I got fouled, I thought the game was over.
Same here. I remember it so vividly.
Yeah, oh, my goodness, man. The first one, it just kind of – it was like brrr, and popped out. And I shouldn't have changed. I said, okay, all I got to do is just take just a little bit off, and it will be all nets. And when I took that little bit off, it caught the front iron of the rim, looped in, and popped out. Man, you know, I should have just stepped up there again, man. I thought the first one was good, but, hey, man, you can't make them all.
Yeah.
You know, if I could go back in time, you know, I still would want to be the one who would take those shots at the end of the game. I remember – what I remember most, though, I remember going back to my to the house, and Jim Valvano and Jim Saunders were doing ESPN, and – they said, Brian Stiff, 90-something percent free throw shooter. The chances of him missing, you know, those free throws, and they had the odds up on this.
Right.
You know, man, I was good, man. After the game, I answered all of the questions by the media. Man, you know, I was like, you know, talking to my teammates. I'm saying, man, guys, I'm sorry, man. I let y'all down. But when I went back to the house and I saw ESPN and what they said, that's when I broke down and cried, man. I just let it all out. I just said, I can't believe it.
And then that season, you know, obviously that's what led to 1992 NIT champs. But talk about Selection Sunday. We talked to JJ about this. We talked to Junior about this. What was that day like for you? Like, do you remember it? For me as a fan, it was What do you mean? There must be another Brad. Like, they forgot Virginia. What happened? Yeah, what were your thoughts?
We thought that we had the resume. I mean, playing in the toughest conference. I mean, if you look at how they let so many teams in off these big conferences into the tournament, and if you were to apply the same rules for selection today, back in 1992, there's no way that we shouldn't have been in that tournament. Right. And that's when we were just starting to hit our stride, and we just thought that we could have made a lot of noise in the tournament, you know, if we had been received the invitation. But again, you know, fate has, you know, its way of working things out. You know, we went to the NIT. We were able to put together, you know, 3 weeks of good basketball, and you know, we ended up as the 1992 NIT champions.
B, can I ask you a question about then? Because we weren't thinking about it, you know, teammates and homeboys, the whole thing. But were you already solidified, you think, as a lotto pick before the tournament started?
Absolutely not.
No, I wouldn't really think so.
Well, look, after the NIT champions, you know, I went through the process of selecting my agent. I got my agent kind of early, and looking at all of the mock drafts, I was a mid 15 to late first round draft pick. And that's based off everything that I had done over my 4 years at the University of Virginia.
Right.
And they told me that I didn't have to go to Portsmouth. I had earned that right. But they told me that there was debate about whether or not I should attend the Orlando Classic, which was the second pre-draft camp before you got to Chicago. Right. And he said, Bryant, Jeff Alston, you know, he was my agent, represented me for 10 years, very knowledgeable. He said, man, if you go, he said, you could lose potentially $1 million. I said, how the hell are you going to lose something you don't have? I said, if I go there and play well, I could – earn $1 million. And he was like, yeah. So when I went there, man, I went there on a mission. And one of the things that helped me was the fact that the tournament was only a week and a half after our last game at Madison Square Garden. So I was in great shape.
Yep.
My jumper was clicking. I mean, I had a great feel. And I went down to that camp, man, and I just absolutely turned it out. And I was named MVP. And that's when I jumped, you know, into the lottery.
Did you have the Lexus yet, or was that after the camp when we got that fly Lexus that we all got to enjoy?
No, I did hear him say you could lose $1 million. So I was rocking the V24.
That's right. And what? So much after.
You remember that BLS 20?
Yes, sir. A lot of rides in that thing.
And then here's the next photo. We haven't talked about Coach Holland, but I remember his last game. You were very emotional, and you talked about that. Like, you couldn't – that game, you couldn't concentrate, his last one. Talk about what he meant to you, why you – you know, what was that process like when he decided he was going to step down?
He's the – Coach Holland's definition of a Virginia gentleman, man. I mean – class act all the way around, knows how to press the right buttons in order to get the most out of his players. He was an inspiration to me. You know, a lot of people came down, you know, to Lawrenceville, Virginia, rural Southside Virginia, but not many people gave me an inspiration and be able to see a vision beyond myself. And he was able to paint that picture for me. And I love Coach Holland to death, man. I mean, he started recruiting me when I was the age of 13. I used to go to all of the UVA elite camps, team camps, and just built a great relationship with him. And to this day, you know, we talk often, and, you know, it's very meaningful, you know, the things that, you know, Coach Holland would do. Whenever Coach Holland was driving up Interstate 95, he would always stop by, whether I was there or not, and just say hello to my mom and dad, because we only lived 9 miles from Interstate 95. I mean, that's the type of relationship.
That's awesome.
That's the type of person that he was. And those aren't the things that people see, but he's just a giant of a man.
And then when he decided to leave, was there any conversations? Like, when did you hear about it? How was that conversation when he told you, I'm stepping down?
Oh, he didn't tell me. And that's what hurt so bad, because I found out at the last minute. They called a team meeting, and they said that Coach Harlan was not coming back. He explained why. I understood why. It had nothing to do with the team. It had nothing to do with basketball. It had everything to do about respect and what he had built since he had been at University of Virginia, and he felt disrespected because they were moving other projects ahead of UVA basketball, and UVA basketball put our athletic program on the map. Right. And when he explained it to us, he had my blessings. I stood up for him. As a matter of fact, I had told people that I was going to transfer within the department. And I had several conversations with Athletic Director Copeland, and I shared my heart, I shared my feelings, I shared who I wanted to be the next coach. And
that's awesome.
I stayed.
That's awesome.
Yep.
And then,
so who'd you want to be the next coach, B?
Who was your choice?
You played for him.
I know, man. But I told JJ that, like, because we didn't talk about it that much, but we didn't want some new dude that doesn't know us and know our system. We wanted to keep the continuity and, you know, the flow of what we had going, I think. You agree with that? That's how we looked at it.
Well, look, man, I went into his office and I just shared my feelings, man. I was very open. I was very honest. I was very transparent. And I think he felt my passion. Now, whether that persuaded him to hire, you know, Coach Jones, I don't know. But, you know, I was just very honest, man. And, you know, I didn't hold back. You know, I talked to a lot of people before I went in that meeting, and I was prepared. I had my statistics, and, you know, I knew, you know, what this team had, and I knew the impact that Coach Jones had with the recruiting of the team. And, you know, I just presented that all to, you know, Athletic Director Copeland. And, you know, again, I have no idea how that played in his decision, but, you know, we were very fortunate to have Jeff Jones as our coach
for sure.
That following season.
And then, obviously, he's head coach with you now at ODU. But after you go on and having your NBA career, how often would you check in with the program at that point to see how we were doing?
I mean, I stayed in contact, you know, with the guys. You know, I was on my grind, man. I would come back and I would play. I would come back in the summers and I would play with the guys. And, you know, Anthony Oliver was like one of my best friends for life. And the Leatherwoods was still there. You know, I was always calling back Miss Johnson, you know, finding out, you know, what was going on with the program. And she was keeping me up to date. You know, so I stayed very, very connected with the program, you know, in my own way. But I didn't want to be a nuisance, man. And I got a chance. I had broken my foot my rookie year. I got a chance to come back and watch the guys play. And, you know, it was just special, man. UVA holds a dear place in my heart. And I love those guys that was on the team. And I watched every game I possibly could when I was in Denver. You know, although the games came on at 5 o'clock, you know, I had to hurry home to get home to watch those games, but man, it was worth it.
And then we'll come back to Virginia in a bit, but this is a picture of you shaking David Stern's hand. What was your NBA draft day like?
Man, it was unbelievable. My draft day was in Portland. You know, I look at, the draft today and what it was back there. It wasn't the glitz and the glamour.
Right.
You didn't have the entourage and stuff following you. You know, actually, when I think back on it, it was just me and my dad that went to the draft. My mom said, look, I've missed enough time from work, you know, chasing behind you and this NIT. I can't miss any more days of work. You know, so, man, I tell you, man, if I could go back and do it all over again, man, I'd have my entire family out. But that wasn't the trend back then, yeah. You know, but I was so excited, man, and, you know, I just could see the future in front of me, and, you know, I was just excited, man, to start going up against a lot of the guys that I admired and I had seen in TV and in the NBA, so I was very focused at this moment.
Now, was there a welcome to the NBA moment that you had on the court, or was it a seamless integration for you?
No, I think it was a seamless integration because, again, I signed my contract early. I went out and I started working with the team a month before the season started. So we had pickup games. I was playing really well. I knew who my competition was. So I would sit back. I was analyzing their game. I was playing against them, see what worked and what didn't. The biggest transition I had was, okay, posting up in the NBA was different than posting up in college. I had to learn the defensive rules because instead of shooting over Ted Jeffries, I was shooting over Dikembe Mutombo. So that was like my welcome to the NBA moment. I had to figure that part out. But once I did, right. I was good.
Yeah, you had a good practice partner in him.
And you really had your jumper going at that point. I remember during the season, especially your last year, and then after the season, we were working on getting the range, and you responded as always.
Yeah, you know, but it was a little bit different, though, man. That distance really made a difference. The way I got my shots, my first 3 years, I struggled with shooting the three, but after my third season, then I started feeling more comfortable, you know, playing away from the basket, shooting it behind the three-point line. And then that's when I felt I became a complete NBA player.
And this next photo, you with the now C captain on your jersey. I remember when that came through, and it was very early in your career that you were named captain. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was my second year, man. And, man, I worked so hard in practice, man. I mean, there was nobody in the Denver Nugget program that outworked me. They may work as hard, but they didn't outwork me. And the coaches recognized that. My teammates recognized that. And when they came to me, you know, with the idea, I was like, man, you want me to lead this locker room of men? They said, Brian, you already lead with your performance and practicing on the court. And, you know, after I talked to Dan Issel and the rest of the coaching staff, you know, I felt comfortable. And then as I matured into that role, I embraced that leadership role and I became more vocal and I became the voice of the locker room.
That's awesome. I just wondered how that went because I was like, man, you're still early second year. And then, like you said, people have family, people are grown men not there. How did they receive it? I imagine very well just because of the man that you are, but I imagine it's not always tricky.
You have to remember now, the NBA wasn't set up like it is today.
Right.
But, I mean, when we got to the NBA, when I was drafted in 1992, there was no strength coach. There was no conditioning program. You basically had to do everything on your own.
So
what I did was I basically took Coach Gamble's strength and conditioning program to the Denver Nuggets. And I said, man, where's your weight room? Their weight room was probably the size of a coach's office Coach Bennett's office at the University of Virginia. And, man, I remember I would get guys after practice. We would go in. We would do Coach Gamble's lift. You know, I had guys, man, going out. We were running. We were doing all of the things that we did at UVA and Denver. And I think people just took notice of that. Now, toward the end of my career, that's when they hired a strength and conditioning coach. That's when, you know, they made it mandatory to come back early to get in shape. But when I first got to the league, none of that was in place. And I kind of put some parameters in place for our team, for our players to follow. And I think people respected that.
You were the strength and conditioning coach, basically. That's crazy. And then everyone still talks about this today, the 8-1 upset.
The Rain Man.
The Rain Man. I'd like the vision is Mutombo on the ground with the ball, but what do you remember?
I remember playing against Seattle and them dominating us during the season. And the first two games of that series, during the year, we were getting better and better and better. And we thought that we had a chance to play with them. You know, we didn't know we had a chance to beat them. But when we looked at the film from the first two games, we saw all of the mistakes that we made, and we were still right there with an opportunity to win the last 2 minutes of the game. So we said, look, game three, we have nothing to lose. It's lose or go home. Let's just see if we can put together 48 minutes. Let's not bow down to them the last 2 minutes of the game. And we won game three in Denver. Man, that gave us a little momentum. We won game four. We was like, oh, shit, there ain't no pressure on us going back to Seattle. They all had the brooms out when we left game two. Like, we were about to get swept. So we just said to ourselves, man, our motto was if we could stick with them the first 8 minutes of the game and let them know that we aren't going anywhere, we could transfer the pressure to them in the second half. And that's exactly what we were so gassed in game five after the first quarter. Everybody asked to sub out. That's how hard we were playing. And then our bench came. I remember Robert Pack had the game of his life.
Right.
He came off the bench and just lifted us. And we came back in. We settled down. The starters settled down. And, man, we shocked the world. We made history.
And then this next one. This is the roster. It's a lot of – this is the quite – we were just talking about this before. This is quite a roster. You got Mahmoud – I mean, there was Chris Jackson at the time. Shout out Laurel Bennett. Who like, and then Bison Daly, Brian Williams, who rest in peace. Obviously, LaFonso. Tom Hammonds, who used to eat us up in the ACC. I remember him. And then you got Mark May. I mean, you just got – that's a squad. And then Dikembe, Robert Pack. Rodney Rogers was a rookie, was a beast too. And then obviously you and Reggie Williams.
Oh, man, this team is primed to win in the NBA. But management got a little antsy when the following year we advanced and to the NBA playoffs and lost to San Antonio in three games. And they broke this team up. I think if they had stuck with this team one more year and paid Dikembe, I think that this team could have at least made it to the Western Conference Finals, because we had that X factor in Dikembe.
Right.
Dikembe could play Hakeem Olajuwon one-on-one. He could play against all of the top centers in the West one-on-one, which allowed us to extend our defense to the three-point line. And with that weapon, he allowed us to change the game. But they just gave up on us, you know, I think 1 year too quick.
So as a kid in Charlottesville, the way to keep up with this was every morning run out to the paper and hope the late game made the box score. There was no league pass. There was none of that. That was literally how I kept up with all of it, which was I somehow was still a huge fan just because of – the box score, as weird as that is for the
– I remember I remember I had to buy my mom a satellite, like we were trying to look at the moon in order for her to watch the game.
Yeah. There was no league pass. People – the struggle was real, man.
Nah, it was none of that.
I mean, this is how crazy I was. I would – like, because, you know, if it was a late game, the Daily Progress would not put it in the paper. And then so I'm like, all right, I'm going to wait till tomorrow. I'm going to get – and then it wasn't in the paper the next day. I had to write them and be like, yo, you forgot the late game from the – they're probably like, this Asian kid, he better stop giving us work. Because I was literally like, it kept happening. I'm like, yo, you guys, there's a late game, at least put it in the next, you know. I don't know. We should talk to them about that.
No, that's crazy, Ross. shout out to my boy Darnell Mee, by the way. You know, I grew up playing with him. Be nice.
Yeah, Darnell. I know, man. I went to his wedding.
Was it in Australia or here in Chattanooga?
It wasn't Chattanooga. It was in a small town in Tennessee. I can't remember which town it was.
Cleveland. He's from Cleveland.
Cleveland. Tennessee. That's exactly where it was, from Cleveland, Tennessee.
We used to get them every year in the sub-state, the round before the state. First year, we drilled them, demolished them. Next year, they got us back, last second shot. But Darnell was nice.
He was nice. He was the backup. He was like the third point guard on our team. It was Mahmoud, it was Robert Pack, and then it was Darnell Mee.
Right, because Pack emerged as a big time player.
I remember him. Dunk contest. And he was another one primed.
Hey, yo, Fresh, you see the John Gamble shoulders, man?
I was about to say we had the best in the business. So be nice. We talk about this all the time. Like young dudes now, even when we played, I tell everybody when I played, you know, I got the most out of myself, but there was no secret. Like nobody worked harder than you. You know, nobody worked harder than Brian Stith. John Crotty worked his ass off. June, Corey. And I remember you and AO spending hours with John Gamble after a long practice, after a game, and I'm just going in there trying to be down, trying to hang out. I'm probably like doing curls and you're probably like doing real shit. But it's no secret, B, you know, and I always respected you a lot for that, you know, just as an example of hard work.
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned Michael Jordan earlier as a guy that you looked up to, but going up against him, you always talked about one of your challenges guarding Michael Jordan. What was that like? Now with Last Dance out, he's all the rage. Everybody's coming out with Jordan quotes, but would love to hear your thoughts on going up against him.
Everything that you saw on TV and read about was real, man. I mean, this dude was a player, bro. And what I tell everybody, man, is, and you know, I got a chance to play against them all. He's the only dude, man, that I basically, man, you know, stared at the ceiling at night, man, before we played. You know, it's going down tomorrow, man. You know, I didn't have those same thoughts, you know, with Kobe and Dumars and Mitch, and you know, I slept comfortably, man. But when Mike was coming to town, we were in Chicago. It got real. And Mike, man, the way I describe it is, man, he had all the moves that Kobe Bryant had. He had the hops like Vince Carter, and he was as quick as AI. You put that shit together, man, you got the greatest ever, bro. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Yep. Not even close, I think.
Yeah, I think for people our age, it's going to be Jordan. It's going to be hard.
Yeah,
it's gonna be hard.
But Doug, you see, I got him on the pump fake, baby. I got him on the pump fake.
That's right where you want him. Just go right up into that chest right now.
There you go. Right. And I probably didn't even get the call either.
No, of course not.
I was gonna say that's
an answer. I think Christian Leitner got calls.
They probably had that. They had that Carolina ref in the game too.
So what about watching the Last Dance? For you, these last few weeks, have you been watching it like everyone else and reliving those moments?
Before we get to part two of the Brian Stith podcast, we just want to remind you guys about sponsorship opportunities with Locker Room Access. We can put together a package to help your brand and help with the Wahoo Athletics alumni.
Slam. Chance to win it here. Up the front. This is what you have to do. Back for the tournament.